Welcome to Focus. I'm Craig Cohen. You spend enough time in the professional world and you are bound to come across a moral quandary, something someone you work with or your boss or the company itself does or is tasked with doing, or worse yet, asks you to do that you find just plain unethical. How do you handle it? Do you take a stand and risk your job, or do you stay silent? It's complicated, and not everything is as simple as right and wrong. Or is it? Those are some of the questions that Tina Gonzalez seeks to address in her new book, The Young Professional Survival Guide, From Cab Fares to Moral Snares. In it, Gonzalez shares a number of real-world examples of ethical quandaries you can face in the professional world. She also explores how developing and maintaining a professional persona can help you navigate ethical gray areas. Tina Gonzalez is director of the National Center for Professional and Research Ethics in the University of Illinois College of Engineering and professor emerita in the U of I's College of Business. Tina Gonzalez, welcome to Focus.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here.
I guess I should say welcome back to Focus. You've been on the program before, and we're glad to have you back with us.
Thank you.
As we begin our conversation, we welcome your examples of ethical quandaries that you or someone you know has faced in the workaday world and how it was handled. We also welcome any advice you might have for young professionals just entering the workforce or how to navigate such moral dilemmas. And we welcome other questions or comments that you may have at 333-9455 or 800-222-9455. That's 333-WILL, 800-222-WILL, or you could also email us at will-talk@illinois.edu. You can also post questions or comments to our Facebook page. We are at Will Radio TV Online, or you can tweet us. Our Twitter handle is Will Public Media. What are some of the most common ethical dilemmas that young professionals are most likely to come in contact with when they first enter the workforce?
Well, I think that one of the things that really hangs up a lot of people fall into sort of two categories. One of them is where somebody asks you to do something that makes you uncomfortable and you're not quite sure what the right thing to do. The other is where your own ambition or temptation or desires cause you to cut some corners or be tempted to cut corners. So I think they sort of fall in two categories. One is pressure from outside and one is pressure from inside, and part of the pressure to succeed.
What brings up that pressure from inside?
Well, you know, it's ambition. It's desire to do well. It's the please somebody, show somebody how good you are, show somebody that you should get the next promotion or the raise or the position, or I'm your go-to person. I'll do whatever you'd like me to do. I'm here to succeed.
I wonder if the two, though, are kind of almost always linked a little bit, that whatever pressure you might feel internally that you want to demonstrate your ability to accomplish something might also be impacted by external pressures.
Oh.
Someone maybe putting demands on you in the workplace.
Sure.
That are beyond what you could handle, maybe. And you know it, but you don't say it.
Well, or you don't want to say it, and so you take a shortcut because you figure, I mean, and that's where sort of the temptation and the rationalization enter. Rationalization is really the enemy of getting to the end of your career with the kind of reputation and idealism intact that you started out with. Because most people, most of the time, want to wake up in the morning and do a really good job and be recognized for it and be a success. And along the way, what happens are the rationalizations that it's just this once, nobody will notice, everybody else is doing it, I'll make up for it later, it's just a little bit. And those things accumulate.
Well, there are also, though, I imagine, external pressures beyond the workplace itself. What do you do when you have you're tasked with doing something, you know it's wrong, but if you speak up about it, you know you're operating in a culture where most likely you'd be fired for speaking out. And you have other pressures, financial pressures, family
student
pressures.
Student loans. Desire to succeed. Well, there's a couple of things about that. One is that we really encourage, and I really encourage, our students and our young professionals to look for a good values match before they begin. And in a tough job market, people say, oh, how can I do that? Well, you can talk about it. And if you, for example, from the very first day, mark yourself as a person who really cares about value and integrity. So you ask questions in the interview about how does this company do things and do we have a code of conduct and how do things work here? one of the things that helps is if you aspire to be that person where people say about you, oh, don't ask him. He'd never do that. Go ask somebody else, right? Yeah. If you aspire to be that person from the beginning, and one of the ways you can do that is by talking about your values and what matters to you. So prevention is a huge, huge part of this. So looking for places that match your values, talking about your values so that people know you walk your talk. And then there are things about learning how to navigate in complicated environments, and asking questions is one of the best possible habits you can have, because sometimes the things that you're asked to do, either you've misunderstood them or the other person hasn't really thought them through. And if you can ask a question in a way that's not pointed, that's not full of heat, that's not full of accusation, and say, did I get this right? I know that what we're really trying to do is this, and I want to do right by you. I want to do a good job. I want to make the company look good. Did I understand this properly? Because sometimes when people hear it repeated back, they'll think, oh, no, not so much. Now, sometimes there are people who don't care. And one of the things in the world is trying not to get associated with those people. So prevention, picking where you go carefully, labeling yourself, making it clear that walking your talk is important to you, having a set of skills for working through problems when they occur. And then at some point, if your principles mean anything, you're going to have to sacrifice for them. And, you know, I don't think that's every day, and I don't think it's often. And I do think that there are times when you're asked to do something that you say, that's not something I can do. I'd be willing to help in some other way. It doesn't come very often, and you have to be willing at that point to walk away if it's something that you don't want to be associated with.
There also, I imagine, is occasionally a conflict in terms of you have two people who are tasked with accomplishing something, and they have different ethical barometers. They both believe they are operating in the right, that not just in terms of what they're instructed to do, but in what they're morally obligated to do, mm-hmm. but they've come to different conclusions. What do you do in that scenario if you're one of those two people?
Well, the first is to recognize that you're feeling a sense of competition, right? The first is to recognize that if you're both tasked with it and you have, that you want to look good. I mean, one of the issues is in all of this is this back to the sense of ambition, and I want to succeed and I want to please. And the other is to have ways, effective ways, to talk about those things, again, without saying, well, I'm virtuous and you're a scumbucket, so let's work on this, right? It is to say, help me understand. One of the best questions in the world is, help me understand. We're here to help me understand how you think about this, because I started out thinking about it differently. And if you cultivate curiosity, people are so interesting, and understanding them is, you know, it doesn't necessarily make it okay, and it doesn't mean you're going to change your mind. It can help you understand what their interests are and maybe find a better way for both of you.
This is Focus. I'm Craig Cohen, and we're discussing ethical dilemmas professionals may face in the workplace with Tina Gonzalez, director of the National Center for Professional and Research Ethics in the University of Illinois College of Engineering and professor emerita in the U of I's College of Business. She's written a new book. It's called The Young Professional's Survival Guide, From Cab Fares to Moral Snares. We welcome your examples of ethical quandaries that maybe you have faced in the professional world, from rampant stealing of office supplies to questionable business practices, maybe anything you've come across that you've been asked to do in the workaday world that has given you pause, and tell us maybe how you handled it. We also welcome other questions or comments you may have for our guest at 333-9455 or 800-222-9455. That's 333-WILL, 800-222-WILL, or you can email us at will-talk@illinois.edu. Let's talk about some very specific examples, and let's go back to some of the external pressures that you might face, because that's the really common stuff, I think, where, you know, the boss comes to you and says, I need you to do A or B, and it turns out A or B is in some way morally wrong. What are some direct examples of something like that people tend to face in the workplace?
Well, one of the common ones, and in fact where the book title comes from, is a pretty example that people come back after they've gone to work and say, how did you know this was going to happen? It happened in my first week.
Yeah.
So the example is, guy who's in his first day of his first grown-up job, and he's going across town with his assigned work mentor. They get out of the cab, and the mentor says, oh, here's what we do. You take fare plus five, and that's what you turn in for your expenses, because there's going to be so many expenses you accumulate over time. That's how we do it. And it's something that was specifically mentioned in your orientation as a fireable offense to pad your expenses. And you look around and everybody else is doing it. And he says everybody is doing it. And you look around and everybody else is. Now what? Are you a fool to do it or a fool not to do it? And that's a really, really common expenses. And padding expense accounts is one of the places that a lot of people really get themselves into trouble. And part of it is, you know, you work hard and you're selling a lot of your life and you're, you know, the sense of entitlement, which is also the internal, it goes with the external. So that one comes up a lot. There's the ones where the boss says, look, I don't care how you get it done and I'm not interested in your excuses, just do it. And it is something that you think is really wrong or violates it. And again, you know, one of the things is to, in the first instance, if you've labeled yourself and if you have, one of the things that my teaching partner and I, Gretchen Winter, who's the director of the Center for Professional Responsibility in Business and Society, which is about ethics in the College of Business, we teach Business 101 together, which is an introduction to professional responsibility. And one of the things that we talk about is having some personal scripts prepared for those moments. So if you have a buying time script, you know, I'd really like to do a good job. Can I make sure I understand? Can I loop back to you in an hour? So you have a chance to think and maybe do some analysis and come up with some alternatives you can offer, because just saying, oh, no, I won't do that is probably a non-starter. Coming back and saying, gosh, I understand that what you're trying to get done is, would this way work as well? Or I did this, I got your goal accomplished, and I did it this way. And sometimes a personal script for in the cab, the fare plus five scenario, if you just are prepared and know in advance that people are going to suggest that you do one thing or another, and you say, oh, I'm such a straight arrow, I'd never be able to pull that off effectively. And again, that's talking about your values, and it's, you know, so you don't always really understand, and it's easy to jump to conclusions about other people because it turns out that mind reading is a really imperfect form of communication. So asking questions really goes a long way, and having some prepared personal scripts so that you can express your values, express your concern, ask the right questions can make a huge difference in problem solving, and if nothing else, buy you some time while you think.
Another example that occurs to me that I imagine is relatively common is how someone, let's say in sales, deals with a client, that maybe there are certain policies about what you are expected to charge or not charge, or what information you share with them and whether or not you're giving them the full picture.
Well, one of the pressures that a lot of students and a lot of young professionals encounter are mixed messages from the system or incentives to do something that is, you know, so sell, go out, sell this hard, sell it hard. We don't actually care who you sell it to. So a lot of young professionals, for example, were getting in the mortgage refinancing industry in the days of that big boom, were in situations where, or where you sell on commission and you know that what you're selling isn't necessarily in the client's best interest if you're selling a financial product. A lot of those scenarios come up a lot of the time. And so one of the questions is, again, before you go into it, if that's going to make you really uncomfortable, maybe you should look a little bit harder. And one of the other questions is, if you really hustle, are there ways that you can do it in a way that you feel is reputable and credible and advances your reputation and integrity? Because one of the things to bear in mind is that there never comes a time in your life when there aren't pressures. There's always the next job and the next promotion and the next raise and the next recognition. And there's never a moment when you wake up and say, well, today I have enough power, status, money, whatever. Today I'll start being ethical. How you start is how you're going to go on. And starting as you mean to go on is really an important step if getting to the end of your career and being proud of yourself and having your family proud of yourself and having left things better than you found them is important to you. And thinking about it and knowing that there's going to be pressures, knowing that there's going to be temptations, knowing that there's going to be incentives. And, you know, sometimes the system is really stupid. Sometimes the workaround, you know, sometimes somebody says, oh, yeah, the system is dumb, but we just sign the false time cards because that's the only way to get people paid on time. Those are serious dilemmas.
You're listening to Focus. I'm Craig Cohen, and my guest is Tina Gonzalez, Director of the National Center for Professional and Research Ethics in the University of Illinois College of Engineering and Professor Emerita in the U of I's College of Business. Her new book is The Young Professional's Survival Guide from Cab Fares to Moral Snares. We welcome you to our conversation with any examples you may have of ethical quandaries you or someone you know has faced in the workaday world and maybe how it was handled, or any advice you might have for navigating the professional world for any young professionals out there that may have just joined the workforce, something other than, you know, stop listening to public radio programs and get back to work. We do welcome those thoughts or any other questions or comments that you may have about ethical dilemmas and other challenges in the workplace at 333-9455 or 800-222-9455. That's 333-WILL or 800-222-WILL. You can also email us at will-talk@illinois.edu. Are some ethical dilemmas more complicated than others?
Oh, sure. Absolutely.
In what ways?
Well, sometimes you face something where you can see a right thing to do and you're choosing between two values, right? And they're both important to you and you care about both of them. And so there's a professor at Harvard who's James, I actually never know how to say his last name, Badaracco, mm-hmm. Who writes about defining moments where you have to choose between right and right. So you have two important values and you have to choose between loyalty to a family member and your fiduciary duty to your family. So, for example, here's a dilemma that a former student raised that is actually a pretty common one that repeats a lot. You learn something in the course of your job that's going to affect a family member. So you're at a family dinner and your widowed aunt says that she's going to put the entire estate from your uncle into stock from the company because they treated him so well over the course of his career. You've just finished auditing the company and you know they're getting ready to declare bankruptcy, and so her entire investment will get lost. You have an obligation not to disclose that information that you learned in the course of your job. You also don't want to see your aunt's entire life savings go down the drain. So now you have a complicated dilemma. How do you do right by both of those things?
And that scenario, all that occurs to me is to say, you know, in general, it's a good idea to diversify your investments.
Sure. Right. So one of the questions is, can you say to her, you know, I'd be really glad to help you invest. I have a really big push at work. Could you hold on to it and just put it in a CD until I can come back and help you do something? Or can you do a delaying motion with so you don't violate anything? Can you talk about the value of diversification? Can you say, gosh, I think it'd be really good if you'd get a financial planner and consult because it's a lot of money and I really want to see you do right, you know? Yeah. So, so that one, there's a way out sometimes.
Sometimes there's not.
And sometimes there's not. And so sometimes, you know, you're trying to thread a needle and it's really complicated. And so the ones where you're choosing between rights are often, I mean, it's rarely a circumstance where you say, oh, I'll do something truly vile and disgusting, or I'll be a good person, right? They get gray, and there's a lot of gray in the world, and it can be complicated, which is, you know, so one of the things that we talk a lot about with our students in the College of Business is an analytical decision-making framework where we build what we call professional responsibility muscle, where you just get in the habit of going through what are the issues and what questions do I need to ask and what rules apply here and what resources do I have and who could I go to for advice and what options do I have, who's affected by them before you decide. So as a matter of course, you go through a really pretty careful, but we practice it every week in Business 101. We practice it over and over and over and over so that it becomes second nature that you start to say, well, can I identify the issues here? I really care about my aunt. I have an obligation at my work. You know, one of the questions in that circumstance is, did they know, had you disclosed in advance that you have family members who are connected to the company that, you know, is that something that you disclosed and was that cleared? And, you know, there are a whole series of things that if you go through them, you can at least identify the problem more specifically so you can start working on a solution.
Should I infer from the fact that you teach that course and that you've written this book that it's your belief that too many young professionals don't ask these questions of themselves before they get into the workplace environment?
Yes, absolutely. And I don't think it's just confined to young professionals.
I was going to ask that as well, because in all honesty, I mean, this is not easy stuff. People can work 40 or 50 years and never quite figure it out.
Well, and part of it is that it's so much easier to flinch and not think about it. And yet, if you go back to core values and who are you and what do you stand for and how do you want to leave the world different when you're done? You know, are you giving back to the world to make up for all the things it's given to you? What are your values and what's your belief system? And if you start there and think about where do I want to end up, some of these things can help you end up where you want to be so that you don't sell your soul bits by bit.
You mentioned values, and you note in your book that a Gallup Foundation Institute for Global Ethics poll found people worldwide in various cultures and roles share certain core values, honesty and freedom and responsibility, fairness, love. But you also note that there are some people who don't value honesty or fairness or the other characteristics, those other values. What if you end up working for one of those people? What do you do then?
Well, one of the questions is, were you careful in checking and can you avoid getting in that situation
right.
in the first place? The second one is, again, if you have labeled yourself, if you started at the interview by saying, gosh, what is the code of conduct here and what matters so that people know, you know, there are a lot worse things in this world than being known as the office goody two shoes.
this you're saying that reminds me of an incident, another organization. Years ago, where I was dealing with a potential client and had shared information with them that really kind of put the organization I was working for at sort of a little bit of a disadvantage because, you know, now it was honest, it was clear.
You told the truth.
I told the truth.
There's Uh-oh.
I'm stepping around and I told the
you
truth.
You told the truth.
And I got a reply from the person heading up the organization basically saying, well, why did you tell them that? Oh, yeah, you're honest.
Well, exactly.
So it was that same kind of thing. Oh, yeah, we can't really.
We can't rely on you to dissemble or be.
Right. That if we're going to approach this in a different way, we can't have him involved.
Right.
That kind of thing.
Well,
so it does come
and
up.
And that's actually a really positive place to be. I mean, so not being there in the first place. And, you know, one of the things about the truly evil people of the world, and there are a few. I mean, there are people who just don't have any moral compass.
And again, I'm not suggesting that
this
example, this person I was referring to was.
No, I'm just sort of extrapolating it, take it to the worst case. There are people like that. And in the short term, it can be an amazingly successful strategy, which is why people look at it and think, well, he's cutting all the corners and rocketing to the top. Well, you know, one question is, one of the rules of the world is that what goes around comes around. It just takes longer than feels just. And the other is, who do you want to be? What do you want to stand for? Because, you know, and one of the questions that I think is really worth considering is, how much is enough? You know, do you really believe that the one who dies with the most toys wins? Or is there more to life than that? Is there the quality of your relationships and the quality of your family? And, you know, after... Look, it's a desperate situation if you don't have enough to eat or to feed your kids or to clothe your kids or to get them to school. That's a different category of things than most of the young professionals I deal with are encountering. So for them, it's a question of what's success and this issue of how much is enough and where do you want to find a balance and what do you want to stand for and what do you want to give back to the world? What kind of relationships do you want to have? Do you want to get to the end of your life and be on your deathbed and think, oh, man, I wish I'd spent more time at the office?
Right.
No, really, not so much.
I want to get back to this idea of what happens when you do make that wrong decision, because everybody eventually is going to.
Well, we all make mistakes.
Yeah, and I want to get into that in just a couple of minutes, but a reminder that we're discussing ethical dilemmas that professionals may face in the workplace with Tina Gonzalez, director of the National Center for Professional and Research Ethics in the University of Illinois College of Engineering and professor emerita in the U of I's College of Business. She's written a new book called The Young Professional's Survival Guide, From Cab Fares to Moral Snares, and we welcome your questions and comments at 333-9455 or 800-222-9455. That's 333-WILL or 800-222-9455. WILL, or you can email us at will-talk@illinois.edu. And we will talk more after a short break. This is Focus. This is Focus. I'm Craig Cohen, and my guest is Tina Gonzalez, director of the National Center for Professional and Research Ethics in the University of Illinois College of Engineering and professor emerita in the U of I's College of Business. Her new book is The Young Professional's Survival Guide, From Cab Fares to Moral Snares. We welcome you to the conversation with any examples you may have of ethical quandaries you or someone you know has faced in the workaday world and how it was handled, or any advice you may have for navigating the professional world for any young professionals out there that may have just joined the workforce. We welcome those thoughts and any other questions or comments that you might have about ethical dilemmas and other challenges in the workplace at 333-9455 or 800-222-9455. That's 333-WILL or 800-222-WILL. You can also email us at will-talk@illinois.edu. So as we talked about right before the break, most of us want to be above moral reproach, to have confidence that every decision that we make reflects our own sense of fairness and honesty and reflects our own integrity. But we can also make mistakes. We are human beings, right? So at some point, even ethically, we probably will make some sort of mistake. What do you do when something goes wrong and you realize you have failed to live up to your own ethical precepts in the professional world?
Well, I think it's really important to emphasize that we all do make mistakes. It's the human condition. We all make mistakes. You're going to make mistakes. I've made a lot of mistakes. You got to learn from them, first of all, and be committed to that. So the first barrier in making a mistake like that is facing up to your own embarrassment. Because a lot of kids, one of the things that we talk about a lot in Business 101 and with our section leaders for Business 101 is the first rule of being in a hole is stop digging. So you can't keep making it worse. So you overslept and you missed something or you forgot to do something. Don't try to cover it up. Just go and admit that you've done it. And there are, in American culture, there are some elements that make an apology a meaningful one that will be accepted. And I call those the four R's. And the very first one is remorse. Remorse is, I'm sorry, not I'm sorry this happened, or I regret that you're unhappy, right? And the second one is responsibility. I did this, not, oh, it was somebody else's fault, or the system made me do it, or I didn't mean to. Which usually means I didn't mean to get caught, by the way. It doesn't really mean much. And then there's a sense of rehabilitation that matters to people. Here's what I'm going to do differently next time to make sure this doesn't happen. I'm getting a third alarm clock. I'm going to have my friend call me to make sure. And then there's a sense of recompense. So to the extent that I can, here's how I'm going to make this better. So remorse, I'm sorry, responsibility, it was my obligation to do it and I didn't. Rehabilitation, here's how I'm going to change so this never happens again. Recompense, to the extent that I can, here's how I'm going to make up to you. And because we all make mistakes, nobody is going to expect you to be perfect. There are some mistakes that are going to have long-term lasting consequences and you're going to have to live with those. It virtually always makes it worse not to deal with it early. So the longer it goes on, the worse it gets. So overcome the embarrassment, own it, apologize to the people you damaged to the best of your ability, do what you can to do better, learn from it.
I imagine the same thing applies then also to thanking people who do something right.
Absolutely. Sharing the best. I mean, one of the really hard lessons to learn, particularly if you're early in your career, although I certainly have worked with people who never seem to grasp it, is that sharing common courtesy goes a tremendously long way in this world. Just plain old good manners. Because we all interact with so many people all day long. You know, we work in these organizations infested with other human beings. And so plain old good manners just go a long, long way.
Now, that said, and forgive me for interrupting, yes, but if you characterize the people you work with as infestations, I'm not sure that those...
you know, I teach and work with a lot of kids who say, well, you know, I would do really well except so-and-so's in my way or that other jerk needs to change. Well, the reality is we're going to interact with human beings all the time. And so You know, and they're going to have bad days, and you're going to have bad days. And the more that you spot them some courtesy, and the more that you spot them some room, the more you're likely to get that back when you're having a bad day. And the more that you share the glory when things go well, the better you're going to look, because people are going to say, wow, you know, there's somebody who's mature and willing to share. And those are the people who get promoted.
Well, and this also points to this idea of how you can contribute to a culture within whatever professional environment you're in. That if you are of the mindset to give someone else a break when they're having a bad day, and that they give you a break when you're having a bad day, because everybody does have those bad days, that can go a long way towards creating a more positive working environment for everybody.
Well, wouldn't you prefer to work in an environment like that?
I'm happy to say I do work in an environment
like that. It makes a big difference. It makes a huge difference. And one of my favorite terms out of all of social psychology is a term called the sinister attribution bias, which is that the short version is, I'm okay, but you're a jerk, and you just assume other people. And the more you know about people, the more you're willing to spot them a break. So the more you like somebody, the more likely you are to go to them and say, hey, Craig, what happened? What'd you do? What were you thinking? Before you just say, oh, off with his head. And you, if you extend that to people, they'll extend it back to you. And it makes a huge difference in making it a nicer place to live. And really, wouldn't you rather be that way?
This is Focus. I'm Craig Cohen, and there's still time for your questions, comments, and workplace ethical quandaries for Tina Gonzalez at 333-9455 or 800-222-9455, or you can email us at will-talk@illinois.edu. Phone numbers again, 333-WILL or toll-free 800-222-WILL, and we will go to Ed in Naples, Florida. Good morning.
Good morning. You know, part of the problem with a lot of these situations is there are a lot of outside influences that people are not really prepared for in many cases. Through the years, I've always had a small business and would always get catalogs from places that sold, you know, stationery places, pens, pencils, whatever. Not the big names, but just, you know, companies that were out there. And their catalogs would always have all their stuff in there, very, very overpriced. And they would always have somewhere in there that if you spend X number of dollars, we'll send you a television set or something similar. And there was always a separate page for where would you like the television sent. The of course, these were always sent to the purchasing agent and, you know, spend a lot of money with us, your company's money, and we'll send the television to your home. And it's easy for people to fall into traps, and that must work because through the years I have always continued to get those catalogs.
Oh, it's a really effective technique, and it has to do, again, with identifying that you have a conflict of interest and that you have a conflict of loyalties. I have a friend who I worked with early in my career at the university who's now a Silicon Valley entrepreneur, David Frankel, who comes back and talks with our students in the College of Business about exactly some of those things when you work for a company, because there are conflicts of interest that are rampant in all these things. And one of the things is to, again, it's preparation in advance and thinking about it. I'm spending the company's money. Should I really, does my boss intend that I should get a new television out of this? Or is this a television that we can have for the break room? I mean, a transparency and going and saying to somebody, look, we can get this, we can get a television. Or here's another example that comes up all the time. You get an early bird registration fee. So you're spending company money to go to a conference, and the early bird registration gets a drawing for a new iPad. Is that your iPad or the company's?
In the interest of transparency, that last call was from my dad. I wanted to mention that specifically because there is no conflict here because he wrote a book called The New Agent Survival Manual for the insurance industry and another pamphlet called How to Recognize a Professional. So it's very much in the same subject matter. So I appreciate his calling. Let's go next to Lauren? Did I get that right in Champaign County?
Yes, thank you. I comment actually about the youngsters who say, well, if I could get ahead, if this person wasn't there. There was a saying I learned early on in the workplace that said, if they get rid of all the jerks in your workplace, the upper management will just hire new ones. And the ones you have are already well-characterized and well-trained, so hope to keep them. So that was one thing. And one thing I would like to see discussed is, what about the amoral in the workplace? I have been in a situation, just one of several, actually, where I had student workers, we had a charity box to send books to prisoners. And the person was taking books out of the charity box and putting them up on eBay to sell. And her attitude was, well, the people were throwing away the books anyway, so why bother? And we couldn't get through to her that they were, that she was taking from a charity. And what was worse is that when we talked to her parents, they didn't seem to see a problem with it either. So that's one aspect. And also, I've dealt with young people in the workplace who think it's perfectly okay to get pirate video and use company resources to stream it and burn DVDs from it. And again, it's like you're talking to a wall. You can't get through that's theft. And so, again, I'll just listen for my answer off air. Thank you.
All right. Thanks for the call.
I love your saying, and I think it's so true. And one of the issues that you're talking about has to do with a clash of expectations or a clash of values, right? And so the happy circumstances, if you're actually in the position of higher power in those circumstances, to set expectations, set information. And then the thing is that choices have consequences. So if somebody is told the rules of the game in your environment and they continue to break those rules of the game, I guess one of the questions to ask is this a good fit, and do you still want that person in your environment? Because, you know, in the end of the day, people do make choices. And if the young woman, neither the young woman nor her parents saw anything wrong with violating the intention of the donors and stealing from a charity, probably not somebody I would want in my environment. Now, you know, particularly with young people, one of the issues is to, you know, and it sounds like you really worked with her and really tried to help her see a different set of perspectives and see in a different, you know, she may not be in a state in her life that this is a good fit for you or for her, and maybe she'll learn from it, because, you know, a lot of times drops in the pond have ripple effects that we don't see. So maybe you really contributed to her education, and down the road she'll come to see it a new way. You know, one of the things that I think about is that there are, here's a silly example. When I grew up, my father had a parking ethic in our family that we sort of among ourselves joked about as the lobby or bust. Truly, my father would have parked in the lobby of a restaurant if he could have gotten his car in it, because, you know, it was like winning was getting your car as close as you could.
Yeah.
And I got married and started dating a man I eventually married. And when we would go places, he would park at the very back of the parking lot. And I would sort of say, really, there's places closer. We could drive that way. Well, he grew up in a family where his father had been on the board of the Developmental Services Center in town. And he was acutely aware of people who weren't as able-bodied as he was. And so he parked at the back of parking lots. And besides that, there was exercise in it. And, you know, I was pretty embarrassed that that perspective had never even occurred to me. I was so steeped in this park close and then you've won.
Well, okay, but you know what? That thought always occurs to me, and then I still park closer. I think, boy, I could really get some exercise, or I could just park closer and be there sooner.
Okay, but there's the other element that I had never actually considered, which is if I park close, maybe somebody who needs it more than I do will, you know, and do I always park? Do I always follow the really more virtuous way to go? No, because particularly if it's cold or I'm running late or, you know, there's all kinds of reasons. I think about it a lot more than I used to, and it sort of enlarged the world. And so there are a lot of things that you grow up or you think about things or you've been trained in one way, and you just haven't thought about them. And it's that same issue of giving people, spotting them the benefit of the doubt. So saying, you know, whoops, here's the deal. Maybe you didn't think about this. You did all that. You explained it to her, and she still, and her parents, didn't get it. Well, that's disappointing, and maybe somebody you don't want in your orbit, and certainly not representing your company.
We're discussing ethical dilemmas at work with Tina Gonzalez, director of the National Center for Professional and Research Ethics at the University of Illinois in the College of Engineering. She is also professor emerita in the U of I's College of Business and has written a new book called The Young Professional Survival Guide, From Cab Fares to Moral Snares. We welcome your questions and comments at 333-9455 or 800-222-9455. That's 333-WILL. 800-222-WILL, or email us at will-talk@illinois.edu. Next up is Robin in Champaign. Hi, Robin.
Hi. I just had a comment that one of the things that Tina said reminded me that the fact that the politicians and the well-known celebrities that get caught in things, it's the cover-up that is the bad thing. It's if they had owned up to the original mistake or problem, they would not have suffered the consequences that they do when they get caught in the cover-up of that.
So true. The first rule of being in a hole is stop digging. It's not a story. If somebody makes a mistake, we all make mistakes. What's the story is the cover-up.
Yeah. So that was just my comment. I just find that time and again, politicians or, you know, well-known people make the same mistake, and if they would just stop and say, oops, I did wrong, and here's my, you know, taking responsibility, then it would go blow over and people would not, you know, hold it against them.
With you completely.
All right. Thanks very much for the call.
Bye.
And our next caller is also in Champaign. Good morning. Welcome to the show. Caller in line two.
Line two?
Yes, go ahead.
I want to report my first job that I had. I made a mistake that I should have known not to make. My boss had to apologize for what I had done. Instead of saying, oh, she did it, she stood beside me and she said, we're very sorry this happened. We'll see that it doesn't happen again. And I just felt, oh, such relief.
And you still remember it, and I bet that it gave you a lot of loyalty to that boss, didn't it?
It certainly did. It taught me a lesson of how to deal with employees.
Goes a long way, doesn't it?
It certainly has, 40 years of it.
Wow. Thank you for sharing that.
Okay.
Thanks for the call. And there is still some time, a few minutes left. If you have any other examples you'd like to share with us or have any other questions or comments or workplace ethical quandaries for Tina Gonzalez, call 333-9455 or 800-222-9455 or email us at will-talk@illinois.edu. And we do have an email individual asking, saying that you've advised listeners to ask questions before committing to a job. Could you recommend a few discreet questions that a prospective employee could ask a potential supervisor to find out the supervisor's values or ethics?
Sure. One of the things is that when you are looking for a job, it's nice to talk with a lot of the folks, not just the boss or the potential supervisor. So when you get there, be polite and chat up the receptionist. Ask questions there. Ask the person who's walking you down the hallway, what's it like to work here? A terrific question for coworkers and the receptionist and the people you encounter along the way, the person who offers you a cup of coffee, is what happens when a person makes a mistake here? It's a wonderful question to sort of find out what goes on. When you're talking to the supervisor, one of the things is you've done your research, of course, so you've looked up what you can about the company. You've looked to see if it has a code of conduct or if it has a set of business practices or a set of mission statements. One of the questions that's often useful to ask is, I read your mission statement. It says X, Y, or Z. Can you help me understand how that works when it comes into conflict with something else? Hmm. Right? So the thing that's illuminating are the kind of questions where people are making choices. And if you frame it in terms of, I've read about the company's commitment to X, great service, great something, you know, whatever it is in that company. What happens when we're up against a deadline, or what happens when we're up against quarterly profits, or what happens? So the issue about when people are making choices is one of the ones that can be particularly illuminating. And again, one of the things you'll have done by asking those questions that says signal that you're interested in those questions is, oh, you're the honest one.
Something we have not talked about yet that you get into a little bit in your book is the notion of office politics, that there are internal power struggles in a workplace environment. There could be a culture of backstabbing or a self-serving sort of competitiveness that maybe doesn't serve the interest of the company at large. You write that it's important to pay attention to the office politics around you. Why not just ignore it all?
Well, because we do work in these places that have human beings in them, you know, all the way around. And their feelings influence a lot of what happens. So if you're known as the creepy guy who'll step on anybody to get where you're going, you're going to get that back. If you have a reputation of being considerate, having good manners, actually knowing people's names, thanking them for what they do, one of the things is that it's harder to be creepy to somebody who's really nice to you than somebody who's really creepy.
Right.
And, you know, you get back what you give. So one of the things is that you can contribute to the culture. The other is that people's feelings influence a lot of the decisions they make, even when they don't always recognize that. So being a little bit careful, I mean, everybody's life has challenges in it, and everybody has a backstory, and everybody has issues that they're struggling with. And if you know a little bit about them and help people when you can, when you need something, it's going to be a nicer place to work. Now, is every place, do people hold hands and sing Kumbaya? No. You know, and there are places that are stressful and places that things are hard. Do what you can to make it a better place.
How important is it to set boundaries in the professional world?
Oh, if people took away only one lesson, it's about better living through better boundaries. There's a difference between being friends and being friendly. There's a difference between being supportive and enabling somebody's really bad conduct or really bad choices. So boundaries and recognizing that they're paying you for this stuff. It's not about going in and acting out your inner psychodramas. It's about advancing the mission of what they're paying you to do. It's a professional role.
Let's take another call. We have Jeff on the line from I-55. Jeff, welcome to the show.
Hey, guys. Merry Christmas, first off.
Happy holidays to you as
well.
And
to you.
You know, the thing is, I think gossip and just talking about somebody else and just, you know, office politics kills jobs. I was involved in one time, and that's the reason why I have my own business now. I got tired of the, you know, the bad stuff, the bad mouthing people they, without knowing what real truths are. And there are people who will take sides, regardless whether it's right or wrong. The best thing that I can say, my wife taught me this a while ago. I normally don't say anything, but if you can't say anything good about anybody, don't say it at all. And I take that to heart because there are so many people that are being railroaded nowadays just to get to the top. I firmly believe this. If you're in the corporate world, a lot of people in the upper echelon, the staff, the VPs, and some of the presidents actually backstab each other and do things that are not ethical. They'll make their own rules and break them. And I think I've seen it in, you know, firsthand. I just think it's sad. And I think if you own a business like me, your own, you treat people with respect, and usually 9 times out of 10, most people, employees and like, will treat you the same way. But with that note, I'll get off and say great show as usual, guys. Thank you very much, and Merry Christmas.
All right, thank you very much. Organizations, I imagine, their identity and how they present themselves ethically, some of that does come from the top down, does it not?
Absolutely, it comes from the top. Tone at the top, and leadership matters unbelievably in those situations, and the messages that are sent and the choices that are made. And, you know, I think that your caller just raised a question about boundaries, because in office politics, one boundary is talking about other people, and another is how you treat people. And so tone at the top matters unbelievably. And then, of course, how it gets translated in the incentives and, you know, does the company say it values one thing and then does another are pretty powerful messages that go throughout organizations. And, you know, I guess one of the things I want to say is that in Business 101, one of the things that we talk about is the kids, the students are unbelievably idealistic. They really want to make the world a better place. And they think about this stuff and they're fascinated by these questions. So all of us, if we can give our young people, if we can give our employees, if we can give our coworkers a chance to talk about these issues together, it helps everybody think things through. And I have so much hope for the world because I work with so many just terrific students, and the it's just inspiring. And, you know, we need people to have tools so that they can actually make it the better place they want it to be. And we need to contribute to that, too.
Tina Gonzalez is director of the National Center for Professional and Research Ethics in the University of Illinois College of Engineering and professor emerita in the U of I's College of Business. Her new book is The Young Professional Survival Guide, From Cab Fares to Moral Snares. Tina Gonzalez, thanks for talking with us today.
Thank you for having me.
And we welcome any additional thoughts you may have about today's program on our website. That's will.illinois.edu/focus. On tomorrow's show, a conversation with Frederick Hoxie, a professor of American Social and Political History at the U of I. He'll talk about his book, This Indian Country, which seeks to provide a counter-narrative that shows the role Native Americans have played in U.S. history. That's on tomorrow's show. Jim Meadows will sit in for me with that conversation. Today's program was produced by Travis Stanzel. Jason Croft was our technical director. I'm Craig Cohen. Thanks for joining us.